Thank you for joining me here on Styling Matters podcast. I'm your host, Lizzie Richardson. This week, I'm back with my Get Curious campaign. I'm interviewing Susie Redding. I interviewed her live last week on Instagram. It was such a fantastic chat. Susie Redding is a chartered psychologist and an author. She's got 9 books under her belt, and we're talking about her book, Rest to Reset. I found that rest is really important, and it's a focus for me this year, but it's been something that I've been working really hard on for the last couple of years. My father died unexpectedly about 8 years ago. After his death prompted me to really fire up what I do on my social media, all the stuff that I've done on my blog. That was a real turning point for me. But balancing life, balancing work, balancing everything else that we do, sometimes you can have a kind of burnout that you're not expecting, because life's good. You know, you're doing lots of fun things. You're spending a lot of time with other like-minded people. If you're not getting enough rest for your body, rest for your mind, it doesn't actually matter how happy you are. Your body will react in a different way. And for me, it came out as vertigo. And I actually, in a 2-year period, had vertigo 3 times. So I now really know the importance of rest of all various kinds. And my interview with Susie, I share a bit more about some of my journeys. And Susie gives so many amazing tips. Don't just think it's just for yourself. It also can be shared with your partner and with your children. She's a firm believer where you are today, everything leads you to this place. And she has worked tirelessly with lots of people across the globe, new parents. She's worked with teenagers, stressed executives, you name it. She's got you covered. We hope you enjoy the chat. Her book is Rest to Reset. There is a framework within that book called 8 Pillars, and you can get the actual framework as a free download, and I'll pop all the details in show notes, or just head simply to Susie Redding's Instagram account, which will also be in the show notes. Now, towards the end, we do a facial exercise using both hands. Obviously, if you're commuting, you probably can't do this at the time. We hope the audio explains it fine, but if not, and you want to have a go at it, then do pop back to either of our Instagram grid and you can actually see the video. It's right towards the end. So please enjoy, and I hope you get a nugget of 2 or 3 bits of tips that you can implement from today. It'll all be fine. But anyway, thanks for joining us. Thanks to everybody who's already joined in the chat. Do please put some comments in or ask any questions. We will try and tap into that. But if we do miss out and you've got a question for Susie, then you can always DM me afterwards and we can hook you up with Susie for sure. So Susie, you're based in Hertfordshire. You're a mum of 2. Mm-hmm. Your psychology is your expertise. And you're also an author of, am I right, 9 books all about the power of self-care. I think it's amazing, actually. I know we connected last summer at an event, but I didn't realise you'd written so many books. So it's amazing. So do you want to just tell our listeners a little bit more just about how you got to this stage in your life?
Sure. Okay. So I'm a psychologist. I'm a yoga teacher, I'm a personal trainer, and I love drawing these modalities together to empower people with nourishing skills and healthy habits. But I want to be honest with people, you know, qualifications aside, it was becoming a mum at the same time as losing my father to motor neurone disease that makes it a real passion of mine, supporting people through stress, loss and change. Yeah. Because I think it's... You know, at the best of times, it's really hard to prioritize ourselves. But in the midst of all of those, you know, very normal life events, you know, no one is immune. I think you look at what we're living through right now, ways of nourishing ourselves can feel really inaccessible. So that's why I'm sitting here today.
To make it possible. I have to say, I can really relate to that. I don't have children myself. I will confess to everybody, most people who are familiar with my lives know that Alfonso, my dog, is always in the room. So he is behind me, so if you hear any odd noises. But what I can particularly relate to, so I've been on my blogger stroke podcasting journey now for 12 years, but my dad died 8 years ago. And it was actually his death and the grieving for
for him that made me to start take this journey very seriously. And you can really see it in my work, that pivot point from where it became a hobby to actually, you know, this is my purpose. This is what I'm here to do. And sometimes a major change is what gets you on your journey, isn't it?
It does. Or that strikes such a deep chord. For me, it was like, and you were already on that path, but there was something in that life experience that was just, it just galvanizes us. And yeah. There's this momentum and there's this sense of, I'm really going to do this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I lost my protection because you always feel protected. I mean, I'd lost grandparents, but I felt by losing the generation above me, I'd lost that protection zone. So it really made me step up as an adult, even though I was already in my I just turned 40. It was in my 40th year, but it's that kind of step change. And actually I was looking at, you know, I know you're based in Hertfordshire, but we all know that given technology, work is now global. And I was really surprised about the depth of people that you cover. So new parents, teens in crisis, which I really think is an important subject. Obviously stressful executives, I'm very familiar with that myself in my corporate career. But also, which I was quite interested in, was young athletes. Could you just tell us a smidgen about what you do with young athletes?
Sure. Okay, so growing up, I was a figure skater in Australia, an unusual sport. But I had the opportunity, after I finished my master's degree in performance psychology, I had the opportunity to work with the athletes that my coaches were working with. So yeah, it's, you know, yes, I was working as a sports psychologist, but for me, it was more about how I could take care of the whole individual.
Yeah.
So I love
diversity. It enables you, if you really find something on, say with teenagers, you can then potentially for new parents, you've got that longer foresight. Mm-hmm. To be able to explain, haven't you? No, that's brilliant. I really loved it. So we're going to talk about your book, Rest to Reset. Really, really great at the moment. Obviously, we're in January. There's all that new year, new goals. And, you know, we're getting towards the end of the January and we kind of know a lot of things will start to go out the window. Mm-hmm. But out of all the books you've written, what made you come to the subject to write in depth about one area of rest?
I think it was the lessons that I learned during the pandemic.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think it would be fair to say that we spent an awful lot of the pandemic sitting down, right, engaging in what we conceive as rest, but I think we would also agree hand on heart that we were anything but well rested.
Oh, yeah,
got me absolutely thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I knew that, you know, as we emerged post-pandemic, there was a sense of we're starting afresh, but we were so bloody depleted, and we still are. So I got very interested in looking at how can we actually replenish ourselves in the midst of the pace of modern life with all of its stimulation and the decisions that we have to face and the temptations that we are constantly, you know, privy to. So that's where the book came from.
And you know, I was really fascinated with your book about the fact that you don't just see rest as sitting down doing nothing, which is music to my ears. So if I give you a bit of a backstory about me, about 6-7 years ago, I suffered with vertigo and I had two sessions quite close together and it came out of nowhere. Well, I thought it did. And it's all that kind of, you're thinking everything's all going fine and you think life's kind of perfect, and then suddenly your body is reacting to all the stress in your life and feeding you or telling you in a way that you can't control. For those who've never had vertigo, it's a bit like being on a boat that's continuously moving. So you're standing absolutely still and everything's swirling around. I was very lucky that I wasn't bedridden with it, like I know some people have been. But everyone kept saying to me, just rest and it will all go away. There's no medication, you've just got to rest. And as somebody who loves to be busy, loves to be, you know, making things happen, this sitting actually made me more stressful. So do you want to just talk to us a bit about how you see the world of rest and perhaps not just sort of sitting around reading and stuff?
We're all nodding in agreement. The important thing is rest that's enforced seldom feels delicious, right?
Yeah.
Rest not of your choosing can feel like a violence. Yeah?
Yeah.
So this fresh approach to rest, rather than viewing it as lying down in stillness on your own doing nothing, I want people to imagine that rest is anything that brings you back to balance.
Yeah.
It's anything that brings you a sense of peace or harmony. And it's not just something that we do after the fact. It's not just something that we've got to work our butts off to achieve. Rest is also something that we do proactively to prepare us for what's to come in our day, our week, our months, years ahead. That's a whole different approach.
Do you think people should tackle rest as a daily routine or build it into their week? How should one, if they really don't know where to start and they're getting the message from friends and family, maybe even medical experts, to say you need to rest more, and that's not in their nature, should they tackle it weekly or start with daily?
I would say rest needs to happen in response to the stress that we experience.
Okay.
And I'm talking stress in terms of visual and auditory stimulation, so the amount of time that we spend on screens, being in loud, bustly, noisy environments, having deadlines, the volume of communication that we have to navigate. Mm. If that happens daily, we need rest daily.
Yeah.
But for anyone that's going, oh my God, are you going to give me another thing to do? No, I'm not talking about you must lie down for half an hour. I'm not even saying you've got to go for a walk for half an hour. I am saying we need these little purposeful pauses, sometimes as little as 10 seconds, maybe 30 seconds, 5 minutes, 10 minutes. We need to weave these opportunities for replenishment and energetic release throughout the course of our day so that we can navigate what's required of us.
Yeah, I was taught a technique, particularly at work, to sometimes when to take a moment, because you normally find, don't you, that when people are in the toilet, they're actually taking their moment in there, because in a working environment sometimes it's just the ladies' cubicle is the only place you can get 5 minutes peace and quiet. But I was taught this technique to place your feet firmly on the ground, and if you can actually to take your shoes off and really feel the ground and just breathe in and out for about 5 to 6 seconds. So I find that really, really works for me. So you've brought me nicely on, actually, in my styling profession. When I work with women, particularly busy mums, working mums, mums with partners, you know, they've got multiple people that they are organising. And not to be too gender specific here, because I actually know some single fathers who are the primary care. But if you are the one that's running the household, sometimes they're always saying, I haven't got 10 minutes. How do I calm the house to have 5 minutes of calm? And I wondered if you had any advice on that, because I know with the styling, they're going, Lizzie, I haven't got time to shop. I either shop at midnight online or whilst I'm supermarket shopping. So in that noisy house, how can someone get a bit of peace?
I would suggest that we don't have to wait for it to be quiet outside of us. I mean, it would be bloody nice, don't get me wrong. And that is a human need. You know, the opportunity for spaciousness, for silence, if that's what you're craving, that is a human need.
Yeah.
Okay. But if you just can't get it, then we need to find ways that we can soothe our nervous system in the variables that we're embedded in, right? Because we can't just leave the house. We can't just do what we fancy whenever we want. So I would use some kind of breathing practice or some kind of gentle touch, self-massage, and it has to be coupled with all the kind, tender words. So it could be as simple as a single candle breath where we breathe in through the nose and then through out through the lips, gently pursed lips. It looks and sounds like this. Even just one of those is going to help us drop a little. You know, you mentioned grounding your feet. Even just if you're sat down, if you just press your hands against your thighs, feel the grounding there, feel the support beneath your feet, beneath your sit bones. If you need maybe a little bit more of a, I got to let go here.
Yeah.
Something like this where you are, I am consciously releasing what I no longer need. I'm flicking it off. I'm letting it leave the building. Or maybe if we need something uplifting, then it would be a good old chicken wing shoulder roll, breathing in, elbows up, breathing out, elbows back and down. Yeah. So we're releasing all of that. You know, we carry the weight of the world on our shoulders. Yeah. Or
that's what you want to do at the desk, actually, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Especially after you've had a terrible phone call or something.
The one to do at your desk is the shrug and sigh. Oh. Squeeze your shoulders up to your ears. Take a deep breath in. And as you exhale with a sigh, let your shoulders drop.
Oh, and then you put your head down.
Yeah. Do it another time. I think we need a couple of those to really let
go. If you're watching, get involved. Mm-hmm. There you go. Shoulders.
Yeah.
It feels good, actually.
Movement is
doing that.
Powerful mood alchemist. Yes.
Yeah. No, that's really good. Actually, it is just, isn't it? Those little simple things that can really help with that. Now I don't know whether you agree with this or not. I'm hoping it's to be a more restful Lizzie when I'm communicating to others. Now, I have been known to use the term "I'm too busy," and all of that quite a lot. And the last 3 or 4 months, I've, particularly with friends and family, I thought I need to stop saying I'm too busy for people, because then if something serious was to happen, they might not come to me, and I didn't want to be that person that they didn't come to. So I started to change my language to sort of, instead of saying I'm too busy, was to go, yes, if I can make it a bit later, or yes, if we can make it another day, rather than saying, no, I haven't got time for you. And I found being a bit more, with that kind of attitude actually shows me as a more rested person. So would you say language plays a big part in what we do?
Absolutely. I think that's a really insightful observation. Even something as simple, and this is something I noticed, even something as simple as slowing down our speech helps us feel more paced. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's the nature of what we say. Now, the words that we use have a really big impact. Yeah. Can we just do a little experiment?
Okay.
We're saying, okay, just how does this feel, Lizzie, when I say no?
There's
no. Yeah. It kind of, we recoil from it. Compare it to yes. Yes. There's like an expansive, spacious quality to it.
Yeah.
Even in the words that we use, if you can't do something, we can say, sweetie, thank you so much for that invitation. I can't do that, but I can do this. Might that work? Right?
Yeah. I mean, I picked up on this because I noticed I'm very, very fortunate. I always say this. I have a lovely husband who gets me. He runs along at life just like that. You know, the best of times, he's like that. The worst of times, he's like that. Whereas I'm up, down, up, down.
Me too.
Perfect kind of. Yeah, perfect couple together. But I had picked up on the fact that whatever I asked for, however demanding I was, it was always met with, yes, absolutely. And I never noticed the second part that I had to step up to, because it was the way he delivered, yes, absolutely, then got me to do what he needed me to do. Do you see what I mean? I thought it was a very clever technique that he was using there. He never said no. And that's what kind of got me to that kind of point of, you know, it's the way you deliver, the starting point gets people on board, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So coming back, I think back to your book, I noticed there was a quote in there, because this really ties in lovely with what I was about to say. This is actually probably more in the workplace rather than in the home. Throughout my whole 25 years in the corporate environment, in every team I've worked, in every brand I've worked in, there's always one or two individuals that love to wear that badge of honor of, you know, relentlessly pushing. And I think your quote is, there is no badge of honor in relentless pushing,
only burnout. Now, what I found is those people never really got burnt out, but me trying to keep up competitively with those kind of injuries led me to burnout. So what coping mechanisms can you offer in that kind of competitive environment to go, you know what, that's them, that's not me. I need to not feel I need to do that.
Yeah, I think if we notice when we're falling into that trap of comparison, to just say, right, I'm doing it again. I must remember that my resources are specific to me. Who knows what variables these other people are embedded in, right?
Yeah.
And even on the surface of things, if it looks like they're immune from burnout, I promise you they're not. No one is immune from burnout. And we just need to come back to, okay, there is a difference between my capacity and my capability. I need to check in with where I'm at as a human being, bearing in mind all of the demands that I'm facing, and I need to give myself permission to pace myself, because my energetic bankruptcy serves no one. And actually my ability to keep going, yes, which requires managing my energy, serves everybody.
Yeah.
So it's okay. If your pace looks different to somebody else, that's fine. If your levels of productivity look different to somebody else, that's fine. Yeah, but we're embedded in a society that tells us you snooze, you lose. Push, push, push.
Yeah,
I think
in the working environment, I feel there has been a change over the last 10 years. When I joined it 25 years ago, those above in management really drove that. You know, you had to be there all hours of the day. There's a love-hate relationship, isn't there, with digital life. It gives us the freedom to connect in the way that we're doing and having these great conversations. But then there is also that kind of always on mentality. I struggle, and I try and do this. I put my phone away from about 8:30, 9:00, because I can get wrapped up in emails, or I can get wrapped up in a DM or something, and then it sticks with me. This probably comes down to probably a bit of advice that if any parents listening who've got teenagers, how do you get them to get off their screens to be more rested for their next day at school and stuff?
Such an important conversation. With anything that we want someone else to do, right, we've got to understand that just telling them is not enough. We need to model these behaviours, but also we need to have conversations where we're talking to them about what's important to them. What do they want to achieve? And what are the behaviours that are going to help them do that? So, you know, it all comes down to intrinsic motivation. When someone tells you, that is never going to be enough to galvanise you. It's got to come from what's in it for you, what matters to you, right?
Yeah, showing now the value to them.
Absolutely. And I think it's so important that we walk our talk as parents. There's no point you saying you must have a digital detox before bed if we're sitting on our phones. And I would advise, and this is certainly something that I try and do personally, keep bedrooms a tech-free zone when it's bedtime. Yeah?
Yeah.
You put your mobile phone to bed in another room, yeah. Have an old school alarm. Otherwise, the allure of it is just so seductive. It's so hard to not.
Yeah, I feel actually really pleased in the fact I had a TV in my room as a teenager. In fact, we were that family. There was three kids, mum and dad, and even my parents got to the stage where they were watching separate programs, and we were really five people in five different rooms. If I had children, I wouldn't be going that way myself, because we've managed to keep TV out of the bedroom. I've never had one since moving out of my family home in that respect. And TV is just downstairs. But the art of conversation, we kind of jest about the fact that we go out to restaurants and then we see some people, you know, you see date night, whether on their screens, or, you know, families and that. I mean, where do you think we are in that? Because I find, I was looking at some of your eight pillars of rest, which we'll come on to a bit, but and how, like, resting is not just stopping. Since having vertigo and exploring different ways that work for me, going out for dinner with girlfriends, and having a good old laugh is my rest. That brings me so much joy. It's sad to say, with busy diaries, that's not always possible every week, but when I do, I really love it. And I'm really chuffed all our phones stay in our bag so we can really be with each other. But do you think the art of conversation is also impacting our rest?
I do. Yeah, I do. And I think, yeah, just how it's, I would even look at how the content that we're imbibing is actually changing conversation. So for example, if you watch video content, so often it's edited so quick and choppy that there are literally no pauses left in conversation.
Yeah.
And I think there's a real danger of us losing our ability to sit and be patient with someone while they find their words. You know, we're so quick to leap in and I want the answer now. And yes, it's having a huge impact on our ability to just delay gratification, to sit in silence.
Yeah.
To allow these spaces. Yes.
And some people need that. I mean, if I take a friend of mine, from a school friend of mine, he had a stutter. But if you were patient and didn't interrupt him, his stutter would go. And I learned this about him. And I would just go, no, you know, for him, he needs that bit more time, and don't interrupt him. Part of one of the reasons why we're having this chat and that is because I contacted you about my sort of Getting Curious campaign that I'm bringing to my audience about well-being for menopausal women. I've really struggled with brain fog, and HRT has not resolved that. There's a bit of a myth that that will just suddenly disappear. Well, it's helped, but I still have brain fog. And actually, if people give me just that little bit more time, that memory recall does come back. Names are very difficult for me. So I think it's really great to hear that a slightly slower pace could be really beneficial for somebody else's health.
Absolutely. I think it's really important that for the health of our nervous systems. Yes, it's a little breathing space.
Yes.
A moment to reflect, to gather your thoughts, to be able to respond in a meaningful way. Let's give ourselves time. Let's give each other time. Yes.
Because, you know, the olden days of just being on the phone when you couldn't see somebody, you would pause to allow the other person to speak, wouldn't you? But I think sometimes with visual communication, that pauseness stops. This leads me nicely on. In your book, Rest to Reset, you bust the myths about rest. Mm-hmm. Before I started on my own journey, I would say, oh, rest is boring and stuff. I still have a bit of a problem, and I wonder if you could help that. I still feel one of the things that I like to do to rest is to stop and read, okay? Mm-hmm. My husband's rest is do the gardening, wash his car, and he's not pacing around the house, but he's doing stuff. And I know for him, that's him decompressing. For me, it's to be quiet in a corner and read. He feels fine. I feel lazy. Where do I go with that?
Okay. So let's look at what that rest is facilitating. Okay. That rest is facilitating cellular healing and renewal. Yeah. It's nourishing the health of your nervous system so that you can stay anchored in the rest and digest response, which is essential for us being able to empathize with other human beings, to be able to be patient and available and present. Yeah. What else is it doing? Okay. So we've got, you know, our physical health, we've got, it's about emotional digestion. There's an opportunity to sit with our feelings. You know, when we're constantly doing and busy and outward facing, there isn't necessarily the time to observe and to feel our feelings, which is absolutely essential for our emotional health. And then we've got the fact that when you cultivate the ability to relax, you're actually building your capacity to be able to sleep, because the inability to relax is the biggest barrier to us getting to sleep. And if we're just trying to relax in those few minutes before we go to bed, is really hard. If you've actually cultivated that ability throughout the course of your day, you're building your capacity to sleep. And we all know how fundamental sleep is for our mental health, for every aspect of our health and well-being.
Yeah, and
is it lazy? Is it lazy? Look at what you're achieving. It is deeply purposeful. I'm not doing nothing. I'm resting.
I actually want a t-shirt that says, I'm not lazy, I'm self-caring or something. Because I feel like I need that. But I'm pretty sure another part of your book, you're saying about resting together but not necessarily do the same thing. And I think we've managed to achieve this. When my husband watches football, obviously he doesn't want to chit-chat. I sometimes do want to be on my phone to maybe online shop, or to maybe sometimes I read or listen to audio. But it's nice to actually be together in the same room rather than feeling you've got to be separate. And I think actually that's something that can actually bring couples together, is to learn to be in the same room but doing different things. Do you want to kind of expand what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, and I think this is important in terms of families, partners. You don't have to be doing the same activity to have a sense of shared time and space.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's the fact that, like you've observed, you and your husband have completely different ways of replenishing yourself. Well, that's fine. There's not one restorative practice that necessarily suits everyone. So how can we give ourselves permission to meet our own human needs in all of those different shapes, but just we come together and we do it in the same place? Yeah.
Just pause in the podcast so that I can tell you all about the Ageless Star Rules that I live by. This is my e-guide that you get when you subscribe to lovebylizzie.com. It's completely free, and all that it means is that when I put any new style posts on the blog, or I have any style notes that I wish to share with you, it will land directly into your inbox. My e-guide gives you everything to get going about living your own ageless style life every single day. They're the rules that I live by, and I want to share them with you. I'll pop a link into the show notes, or just simply head to lovedbylizzie.com. Back to the show.
So coming back to your book, Rest to Reset, how did you go about, because you've got these eight pillars mm-hmm. of rest, and I quite like it because on each of the eight pillars, there's two ways you can be. So do you want to share what that is?
I would love to.
You've got this as a freebie that
I do.
Anybody watching, you can Suzy's link in bio after the show, sign up to that, and then that can land in their inbox literally straight back. So do you want to just talk us through the eight pillars? I've lost it off my screen. I'm just going to log back in.
I would love to. So the eight pillars of rest, this is designed to help people identify the kind of restorative practice that will bring them back to balance. And this is based on the fact that we'll be immersed in different environments. We'll be using our minds and our body in different ways. So the rest that I will need might be completely different to the rest that you need, Lizzie.
Yeah.
But also, what I need this morning might be totally different to what I need this afternoon, because it's based on all of those different factors. So we need a framework to help us put our finger on, that is the thing that feels resonant to me and that thing's accessible. So that's why I've created the eight pillars of rest, and that's the free download that's available. Now, let me just take you through them. I'm not saying that, so for example, the first pillar is asking ourselves how we've used our bodies. Has there been a lot of movement, or have we been still? Now, I'm not saying that one is better than the other.
That's what I love about it. It's not anything's perfect on this. This is a very flexible, moving framework.
It is. And it's not saying, okay, so if you sat for an hour, I'm not saying you've got to move for an hour. So you don't have to. It's not like you're trying to bring it back to zero. It's not like that. It's just to get you thinking about what will meet your needs. So
yeah.
I'll just talk you through the eight. We've got movement, and then we've got stillness. And then we're looking at how we've, the kind of sensory stimulation that we've had. Do we need more stimulation, or maybe stimulation of our choosing? Or actually, do we need a break from stimulation? Maybe a little bit of silence might be nice. Or in terms of our energy,
do we need a little bit more energy? Or actually, do we need a bit of a release of energy? Because I think quite often people are thinking about rest as a way of topping up energy levels. But in actual fact, sometimes we are so full of jittery energy that the restorative practice that's going to work for us is actually letting go. This is where, you know, if someone goes for a bit of a jog or a run, or you have a stretch as a means of, that's the gateway to relaxation, right? Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Not always more energy.
Yeah, no. Now, I work with quite a few people who like to have a run after a really hard day at work and stuff. So yeah, I can really understand that, you know, on the movement side, is it being still, or is it actually even just going dancing or something can be a real
absolute
release breaker.
Totally. Then we need to look at how we've connected. Do we need the company of others? Now, as we've already said, that doesn't always have to be a shared activity. Maybe it could just be sitting on the sofa and holding hands. It could be sitting with the cat in your lap. There's connection there. Or actually, if you've been in conversation all day long, you might actually want a little bit of solitude. And that's perfectly fine as well. And then we've got how we've used our mind. Do we need a mindful focus, or actually do we need a little bit of a brain fade, like a bit of a daydream, a free wandering mind? Then it's looking at emotions. Do we need an opportunity to bear witness to our feelings? Or actually, if we've been feeling our feelings a lot, maybe we want a little bit of a break, and that's also okay.
Yeah, as a teenager, that was quite emotional. My mum always used to suggest doing some cooking or something, just to do something that is quite practical,
yeah,
and not getting you thinking about how you're feeling all the time. You know, get on with something, you know, a bit more tangible, something with your, yeah, hands.
Sometimes, you know, I think that's really important with emotional health. We're learning so much more about our emotions. We know that we've got to let ourselves feel. But I think equally, there needs to be some balance in it's okay to have a little, yeah, bit of a distraction, but let's choose our distraction wisely. Yeah. That's your mom was, that was a wise choice. And then the last two, we're nearly there. The last two is looking at the nature of what we've faced in our day. Do we want something that's really comfortable and easy? Or if we've had a day that's been really kind of monotonous and relentless and kind of boring, actually we might want a little bit of a gentle, stretchy mental challenge. Because that's the thing that helps us feel alive again.
And then, yeah. I mean, especially you get that a little bit at Twixmas, don't you? That, yeah, everyone's had enough of being around people, but also that bit in between, because it can be a real lull. Actually, you then want to feel like, I've got to get out and do something, and you really feel that kind of New Year buzz, yeah, don't you, of getting out and stuff. So yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe it's a thirst for just doing something different, or learning something new. And then the last pillar, now this is really important for people who are in nurturing, supportive roles.
Yeah.
We need to bring into balance this sort of outward focus where we've been giving all day, and actually a little bit of an inward focus where we receive, or maybe instead of extending it all outwards, extending it inwards. So that's the last pillar.
How can somebody, because I know a lot of carers, and you know, I think particularly women over 40, in that kind of, we talk about quite a bit about this sort of sandwich period of our life where you're caring for young, you're also caring for the old. I mean, I have a 96-year-old grandmother that I go and visit about every 3 weeks, because she can't really leave the house anymore. So unless people go there, she doesn't see people. But how does somebody who's in a much more probably 24/7 caring role, what can they do for a bit more on the receiving?
I would say, please, can we become skilled in letting people in and letting people support us? Mm. Because I think we've become accustomed to, I must shoulder my burden alone. I'm hyper independent. I don't need anyone. Or we feel like we're a burden. But the truth is, when we actually let people in, we're strengthening the bonds. We're actually saying to somebody else, I trust you.
Yeah.
I value you. Thank you for being here for me. And it deepens the authenticity of our connection.
Yeah.
Please, can we give ourselves permission to do that? But also, instead of constantly focusing on everybody else, can we say to ourselves, it's okay for me to get a look in as well?
Yeah.
and I'm going to be tender with myself because I'm thoroughly deserving of that tenderness and gentleness too.
Yeah, and if we actually come to the entrepreneurial community of women, especially a lot of people who start a side hustle in a full-time job and all that, if you are also mum of kids and, you know, caring all that, sometimes letting standards not be so high, you know, we can get really finicky on the washing has to be done this way, or, you know, food shopping, whatever. Sometimes actually just lowering your expectations, not trying to be Little Miss Perfect, can actually do let some things go.
I'm a big advocate for that too. Let's temper expectations of self. Let's also temper expectations of others.
Yeah.
And can we allow ourselves to pace ourselves a little bit more compassionately?
Yeah. And have a sense of humor about it, because sometimes my husband will go, if I'm caught up on a campaign and I've also done my corporate work and, you know, I feel like I'm running around, sometimes he'll walk through the house and go, standards are slipping around here. And I go, and that is absolutely fine. You know, because sometimes you just got to have a sense of humor if the washing hasn't been done, or, you know, people are about to, I'm letting out a little secret here, sometimes people come around the house and I have literally gone around every room that I think they will go in 5 minutes before and just give it a bit of a clear. But sometimes you just do, rather than having to, you know, be perfect, isn't it?
For me, we're just one human being, Lizzie, right? We're just one human being.
Yeah. So Susie and I have agreed, so everyone get ready. We're going to finish off with a little relaxing ritual. But just before we do that, because that's where we're going to end the show, firstly, thank you, Susie. Susie is offering this 8 Pillars of Rest as a free download. You just got to go to Susie's Instagram account, go to her link in bio and just sign up for that. And obviously, if rest is your focus right now, then please, it's on Amazon. It's the link's in your book, isn't it? It's on Amazon. You can either buy it as a hard copy or you can get it digitally as a PDF, as an ebook. So yes, Susie, over to you. Let's do this.
Okay, so let's
take my ring
rub the hands together to create some warmth. And we are going to give ourselves permission to take a break, because it's not a distraction. It's an opportunity to replenish ourselves. Okay, a little shake of the hands, and then let's a little pitter-patter, please. With gentleness, just a little pitter-patter across the cheeks. We are releasing all of those facial expressions that we've shown and those that we haven't. Maybe a little open and close of the mouth a couple of times. Releasing tension in the jaw. And now fingertips, firmly stroke fingertips down from the cheekbone all the way down to your jaw. And you'll feel a very thick band of muscle there. That's called the TMJ. That holds a lot of tension as we bite down and muscle our way through our day, right? Let your mouth open as you do so. And then just finishing this practice by cradling your chin in your hands. Let the fingertips curl round to the temples. Let your chin drop down towards your chest a little. If you wish, you can close your eyes. And we're feeling the warmth of our hands. And with this gesture, we are reminding ourselves that we're deserving of kindness and that we can give ourselves permission to have a breather. And that our replenishment serves everyone. A couple of relaxed breaths there, noticing how nice it feels to pause. And then we blink the eyes open and we can re-enter the day.
You know, that feels like a hug.
Yeah.
If you're on your own, that actually feels like the same feeling as when you get a hug from somebody.
Yep.
Yeah. Listen, Susie, this has been fantastic. I hope this won't be the only chat we ever have. But honestly, I've really enjoyed it. Rest, you've really positioned rest as a goal for me this year. I've been on a journey, but I'm going to be embracing it much, much more. So thank you. Thank you so much.
Such a pleasure, Lizzie. Wishing you all the juicy rest of your choosing, darling. Take good care.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of Styling Matters. There's always more on my blog at lovedbylizzie.com, and don't forget to give me a follow on Instagram at lizzie.richardson. Bye for now.